So I'd like to begin by thanking the organizers for this safety net for those of us who like to skate close to the edge. The title of my talk is Locality and Holography in the ADS-CST Correspondence. I'd like to echo Dan Friedman by praising my collaborators, Michael Douglas, Gary Horowitz, and Emil Martinek. This is very much work in progress. I'm going to be telling you mostly about fairly solid things that we agree on, and there will be a point at which I will express some opinions that might not be shared by my collaborators, and I'll try to identify that clearly. So in the past couple of years, we've, as Ed Witten emphasized yesterday, come to start to accept this rather bizarre holographic principle that Tuft and Thorne and Susskind taught us about. And we now have two non-perturbative frameworks in which the holographic principle seems to be realized quite explicitly, and it seems quite clear in those contexts that things that are going on that are very, very different from what we're used to in quantum field theory. And there are two important questions that I think have to be sorted out in order to really say that we understand this stuff. First of all, I don't think we really have a good statement yet of what the holographic principle is. The statements we have seem to be very background dependent. We don't have a background independent way of talking about holography. And the second is, whatever the theory is that we're talking about and whatever holography means, at some level there has to be what Bohr called a correspondence principle in which local field theory comes out of this holographic theory in some sort of an approximation. And it's extremely important to understand what that approximation is and when we can use local field theory. In particular, for the black hole information paradox, we seem very much not to be able to use local field theory in a regime where we had imagined previously that we could, namely a regime in which space-time curvatures are very small. And so in order to understand that paradox fully, in order, for example, to understand what happens to the observer who falls into the black hole, rather than just understand the Hawking radiation that the external observer sees, we have to understand where locality is in a holographic theory. So today I'm going to give you a very, very crude beginning of an answer to this second question. And this is, as I said, work in progress. What we will do is construct in the ADS-CFT correspondence to leading order in the string coupling, we will construct out of the conformal field theory, we'll construct local fields in anti-de Sitter space, operators that obey the usual rules of linearized Einstein gravity in anti-de Sitter space. It'll be slightly less than that, as you'll see. There are some technical things that we haven't worked out at all yet. Now, what I'd really like to be doing is doing the alpha prime expansion. We should be able to get approximate locality whenever all the scales are large compared to alpha prime. I can't do that. We're going to be working within the context of the Tuft 1 over n expansion, in other words, doing free string theory and the first perturbative correction to it. So let me start out by reminding you of some standard large n counting for operators. We've been working both on the ADS5 cross S5 system and the systems that are ADS3 cross S3 cross some compact 4 manifold. A lot of the computations are easier in the second case. The language is easier in the first case because it refers to Yang-Mills theory quite directly, and so I'm going to be using the language of Yang-Mills theory here, but it does have a correspondence in the other case. So there are operators in Yang-Mills theory that have the form 1 over n times a trace of some polynomial in the fields in the adjoint representation of the gauge group, and then there are multi-trace operators that you get by taking operator products of those single trace operators. This symbol contained in that I've used over here for the multi-trace operators just means that when I take an operator product of single trace operators, I get lots of stuff, And the labels that I've put on these operators aren't sufficient to label all the quantum numbers of what I get in the operator product. So I'm using normalizations. First of all of the operators have zero vacuum expectation value, except, of course, for the identity. This is now a conformal field theory. And I'm using normalizations in which the single trace operators are normalized to have two-point functions, which are of order 1 in the large N limit. And I've also normalized the multiple trace operators, so they have two-point functions, which are of order 1. The correlation functions, just general disconnected correlation functions of the single trace operators, are also of order 1 for even numbers of operators, because those are just products of two-point functions. But the connected correlation functions of the single trace operators go like inverse powers of N. And the connected correlation functions of single trace operators with multiple trace operators go like 1, and that order 1 contribution basically comes from things that can be thought of as two-point functions of the single trace operators that are inside of the multiple trace operators. So you sort of go back, take apart the operator product, do the what looks like a Wick contraction, and then go back to the limit that defined the local multiple trace operator. So these scaling rules are the scaling rules that I would have expected from some sort of a free field theory in which the single trace operators are the free fields and the multiple trace operators are composites made out of the free fields. The two-point function in the free field theory is the only thing that's of order 1. 1 over n is playing the role of the coupling constant. The multiple point connected correlation functions are of inverse powers of n. This is the basis for our correspondence with the anti-de Sitter free field theory. The rest of it is basically group theory. Let me remind you a little bit about that group theory. Now, the technical points that I'm going to omit, because we haven't done them yet, we really have studied only fields which are scalars in the anti-de Sitter space. In the holographic theory, we only talk about boundary data. It's completely gauge invariant. If you want to try to extrapolate something into the interior and try to get some approximation to local field theory, you have to choose a gauge, because the fields inside are not gauge invariant. And in choosing that gauge, you can complicate the theory in various ways, and in particular for fields that have indices, things get fairly complicated. So we're imagining we choose some gauge condition which refers only to the anti-de Sitter direction, some sort of harmonic gauge, say only in the anti-de Sitter directions, a gauge which doesn't say anything, doesn't contain the scalar fields that we're talking about, and we're going to be computing everything just to leading order in free field theory plus the first trilinear interactions around that. And so the gauge fixing, I believe, will not affect the computations that I'm about to tell you about. So the basic idea is you expand the supergravity fields around the background. They satisfy some sort of a wave equation. I'm using this sort of metric for the anti-de Sitter space. This is in global coordinates. T is the global time. And there's some sort of second-order operator I'm calling box R, a term that involves the frequency conjugate to this time, and a term that involves the angular momentum on the three-sphere. The way you set up states in the supergravity field theory is you take positive energy solutions of this wave equation, and those are in one-to-one correspondence with single particle states of particles in anti-de Sitter space. So that's the state space of the theory from the point of view of anti-de Sitter space. It's labeled by some particle type label, tells you which Kaluza-Klein mode it is, etc., by omega and by an SO4 angular momentum label, J. Now, in the CFT-ABS correspondence, Horowitz and Oguri following the work of Mack and Lusher, have emphasized that if we really want to do what we would think of doing in string theory and anti-de Sitter space, namely having an irreducible, a unitary representation of the anti-de Sitter group on the Hilbert space of the theory, then the way we have to quantize the gauge theory is to quantize on S3 cross R. We have to choose the place where the formulation of the gauge theory in which the anti-de Sitter transformations, which are conformal transformations in the gauge theory, are unitarily implemented. Furthermore, if the dimensions of operators in the theory are not all integers, then as first emphasized by Mack and Lusher, you have to work on the universal cover of this space, namely what I've written, S3 cross R rather than S3 cross S1. This I've learned recently is called by the cognoscenti CADS, the covering space of ADS. And the final important point, well, one other important point is that I'm skipping over a lot of references here. I wrote these transparencies last night. I remembered the paper by Friedman and Breitenlohner, but there are all these other anti-de Sitter guys and girls, which I just couldn't remember, and I really do apologize, but I was a bit rushed. So this story of field theory and anti-de Sitter space has been talked about by many, many people. One important point, as I already emphasized on the previous transparency, we're working in representations where the energy conjugate to this global time is positive. That, in conformal field theory language, is the combination of K-naught and P-naught, the special conformal and translation generators. Now, that means that in the conformal field theory, if I make a Fourier decomposition of the conformal field, that only the conformal fields with negative values of omega, so O of minus omega, where omega is from now on taken only to be positive, act on the vacuum. The O of plus omegas would have to annihilate the vacuum because they would have created states of negative energy. And so there's a correspondence precisely between the states of the conformal field theory gotten by acting with these conformal operators on the conformally invariant vacuum and the list of states that I gave you in ADS supergravity notation. And so the idea for constructing the free field is that this gives us a canonical way of associating a supergravity field with a conformal field theory operator. Namely, you make this construction here. You take the solution of the wave equation from the previous transparency, you take the positive energy solution, and you multiply it by O of omega, the negative energy solution, you multiply it by O of minus omega. And then the key point is that because, as I've argued to you, at leading order in the 1 over n expansion, these operators OI have only two-point functions. They're only connected Green's functions or two-point functions. And because OI of minus omega annihilates the, of positive omega annihilates the vacuum, you can easily prove from that that the O's satisfy the commutation relations you would have expected for creation and annihilation operators for the fields in anti-de Sitter space. The normalization in this creation and annihilation operator correspondence is completely determined by the normalization of the states, and if I build up the states by using the group, by induced representation theory, then this normalization is completely determined by group theory and a little bit by your conventions. But the important point is it's the same normalization whether I think about it in the anti-de Sitter language or the conformal field theory language because I'm doing the same group theory. As a consequence, there's a unique way to construct out of these conformal field theory operators a local free field satisfying the free field wave equation in anti-de Sitter space. And it's this construction that we've put together. This free field in particular satisfies the following important equation. Let script L sub A be some vector field that induces a symmetry on anti-de Sitter space, some differential operator on anti-de Sitter space, These fields constructed in the way I've constructed them will satisfy the equation that that differential operator acting on this as a field in anti-de Sitter space is given by the commutator of the conformal field theory generator corresponding to that Killing vector with the field. And so it satisfies the Heisenberg equations of motion of the quantum field theory. So this is all leading order in 1 over n. That's quite interesting that we can construct local fields. Here, I'm going to start putting some opinions in. I think it's even more interesting that there's a correction to this in the next order. The correction comes from the fact that in the next order in 1 over n, these OIs have a non-trivial operator product expansion. What does that mean from the point of view of these free fields? Well, it means that the creation and annihilation operators that looked like an infinite set of independent Heisenberg algebras are no longer independent of each other. They satisfy some sort of non-abelian algebra. I can write some creation operators in terms of others. So at leading order, I had free field theory. In fact, I had free string field theory because I could have done this construction for any of the massive string states. But at non-leading order, the Hilbert space or the operator structure of the theory gets a dramatic modification. And I think that this will be, we're at the very beginnings of this, yet sort of the algebraic manifestation of the fact that the theory is holographic rather than exactly causal. So there's a reduction in degrees of freedom. By the way, something that confused us for a while, in quantum field theory, you can often write one field in terms of others by solving the field equations. But there's a very important difference here. The way you do it in quantum field theory is you have some field equation, box phi equals phi 1, phi 2, and then you, quote, eliminate phi in terms of phi 1, phi 2. And this corresponds to the fact, for example, that phi might be a particle that can decay into phi 1 and phi 2 particles. But this is a differential equation, and when I solve it, I have to stick in initial conditions. And those initial conditions are really the degrees of freedom contained in the original field phi. The fact that I can solve for it in terms of phi 1 and phi 2 by solving its time evolution doesn't mean that I've eliminated the degrees of freedom. Here, we have a nonlinear relationship between degrees of freedom, between creation and annihilation operators. And so I really believe it does correspond to a reduction in degrees of freedom. The interactions then immediately lead, just from the calculation that I've done so far, to a non-trivial connected three-point function for the scalar fields in anti-de Sitter space, because I've written them in terms of conformal fields, and the conformal fields have a non-trivial connected three-point function because of the operator product coefficients to first non-leading order in 1 over n. This leads to, at least at a superficial level, there may be some technical problems with this proof, to an argument that the field we've constructed, taken to order 1 over n, can't possibly continue to be a local field. Because there's a folk theorem, the most extensive discussions of it I know are in the textbooks by Bogolyubov and Cherkov and by Weinberg in Volume 1, the folk theorem says if I have free field theory and I want to make an infinitesimal deformation of free field theory that leaves it local, that the only way to do that is to change the Lagrangian. I take L goes to L plus delta L, I get a new local field theory that's a little bit different from free field theory, and I compute the correlations in perturbation theory. That means that in local field theory, if I take the free wave operator and act on it on the local field, and then I take the connected correlation function with some other local fields, that thing is of the same order as the connected correlation function itself. The interactions, it comes from the same Feynman graph. The interactions come from the nonlinear field equations. Here we've constructed a linear field. It satisfies exactly the free wave equation in anti-de Sitter space. But because of the operator structure of the Hilbert space, the fact that these operators are not really creation and annihilation operators, it has a non-trivial three-point function. And that violates the Folk theorem, and it means that these fields are not local to non-leading order in 1 over n. That also implies that the time-ordered products with respect to this global time are not boost invariant. What do I mean by that? Well, the global time is not unique. It parameterizes motions around a circle in the hyperboloid parameterization of ADS space, and you can tilt that circle before choosing the global time. And those tilts will not leave these time-ordered Green's functions invariant. Standard thing in elementary quantum field theory, if you want time-ordered Green's functions to be invariant, the fields must be local. Is this a serious problem? Well, I don't think so, because the physics argument that time-ordered Green's functions should be covariant is that the theory has local observables in it. You should therefore be able to perturb it by coupling a source to those local observables, and the S matrix in the presence of that source should be Lorentz invariant or Lorentz covariant. Rotating it should rotate the source. That requires the time-ordered Green's functions to be covariant. But if there are no local sources allowed in the theory, as is suggested by the holographic principle, then we don't really require that these local Green's functions be Lorentz invariant. Indeed, probably they won't by themselves be observable in this theory. Only the boundary correlation functions extracted from them can be observable. Now, an interesting question which we have not completely sorted out is, can we perturb the definition of the field to order 1 over n in such a way as to restore locality? And more generally, what precisely is the violation of locality that we get from this? Can we parameterize it in such a way? These questions have not been studied. In addition, there are some questions of possible singularities. I can write the local field as some integral of the conformal operators on the boundary. These Green's functions I'm talking about have products of local operators on the boundary. There might be singularities that affect some of these arguments to order 1 over n. My personal opinion now, very definitely not necessarily shared by my collaborators, is that this is sort of an ugly construction, and that the real conclusion that we should make from these is that there isn't any approximately local way of formulating the interacting theory. That leaves open a big question. How do we derive from this theory the usual kinds of local pictures that seem to work for ordinary physics? I hope that this field will be useful in those investigations, but it certainly is not yet proven to solve any of these problems. So conclusions. Well, rather than conclusions, what I've really got are a bunch of questions. Is it really true that locality is restricted to the free field approximation? Is there some sense in which there are local fields, but they're sort of connected? They're not independent fluctuating quantum variables, but like this one, connected to independent quantum variables on the boundary by some sort of deterministic equations. Is that some way of formulating the holographic principle in a more background-independent way? I don't know the answer to that. How does one use these ideas to describe infolding black hole observers? Well, we have a whole other set of things that we're working on in relation to this problem that I don't have time to describe and which are not in a shape, actually, to be described in public. Yeah. So these and other issues are under active investigation, and again, emulating Dan Friedman, there will be a paper sometime in 98, guessed maybe October, and that's what I have to say to you.
Questions? Lee.
Locate a point where some curvature scalars have some value and then measure
Well, my answer to that is maybe, but I'm not sure.
Good question. First part of the question was, you should see some evidence of the diffeomorphism generators acting on the boundary conformal field theory, and I missed the second part of the question.
Okay, so the second part of the question was that in gravity, you can try to construct very, very complicated looking observables that become local when you restrict yourself to an expansion around some background. You define your observables by all sorts of conditional statements that I'm going to look at points where the curvature is approximately such and such, and if I expand around a background where the curvature is approximately such and such, that becomes an approximately... I disagree with that very strongly, Lee. Those operators are not obviously well-defined except in the expansion around a background. And we can talk about that in private.
Other questions? Eva.
Okay. Yeah, I said that in one sentence.
Tom.
Okay.
The question was whether you were talking about the all the fields in the conformal field theory or just the chiral primary operators.
Okay, I mentioned that in one sentence. As far as I can see, this construction at the level of free field theory goes through for any mass level. There may be all sorts of issues of gauge invariance that we haven't dealt with at the higher mass levels, but aside from that, it would seem to me that what we have constructed would be what you'd call a string field theory rather than a field theory.
Would you expect that to be local?
No, absolutely not. Oh, I should emphasize that this statement about the non-locality and about the operator product being nonlinear, that happens already at the level of chiral primary operators. So the creation and annihilation operators for the supergravity fields are not independent due to the non-trivial operator products between chiral primaries.
We can calculate operator products from the supergravity action.
I agree.
Some approximation.
I agree.
So there one has a local action.
So the comment was that we can calculate you can calculate local correlators from the supergravity action, so therefore there should be some local action.
Right. The fact that you can calculate the same S matrix from two different methods of calculation is not yet enough to show you that the local fields really exist as operators in the theory. You use the supergravity action only to calculate these boundary correlation functions. You can imagine, for example, it's quite clear that you get the same answer no matter what gauge you work in. You also get the same answer no matter what reparametrization of the local fields you do, field redefinitions. Okay, as long as they have the property that they don't change the behavior of the fields out near the boundary. So those calculations by themselves don't establish the existence of a local field theory. They only establish the existence of the possibility of matching the correct S matrix with the S matrix calculated from a local field theory. And that's not necessarily the same thing. The paradoxes of black hole information have to do with statements about the operator structure of the theory, about local commutators in the field theory, and whether locality is an observable property on a given smooth background. And I think that this result has some implications for that.
Other questions?
Are the states created by the O sub I operators annihilated by any supersymmetries?
Excuse me, I didn't hear.
The states created by your OI operators, are they annihilated by any supersymmetries?
The question was whether the states created by the O sub I operators are annihilated by any of the supersymmetries.
Yeah, it depends on which OI I take. There are OIs that create BPS states.
But in general, not.
Well, I answered Eva's question, I think I can do this construction at any mass level, and most of those states are not BPS.
Time for one more question. In the front here, then.
Exactly the same as in
classical field theory with coupling constant 1 over n?
Absolutely.
The question was, you know, counting factors of 1 over n are the standard method, is done by the standard method in field theory.
So the answer to that is absolutely yes.
But if we write just a local action in field theory with 1 over g squared in front, then we're just computing tree diagrams, right?
So the comment was, we're putting 1 over g squared in front of the action, we're just computing tree diagrams.
I agree Tom with that nodding, statement too. Also. I still, yeah. I haven't understood the question yet.
What's non-local in a just three-level classical field?
So the question is, what's non-local in this?
I didn't say that there was anything non-local in three-level classical field theory. I said that if I tried to construct out of the quantum theory a local quantum field satisfying local commutation relations, the way you learn in the first semester of quantum field theory, we can do that at the level of free field theory, and we can do that in a more or less unique way. And that unique construction, once I put in the 1 over n corrections, is no longer local. I don't make any commitment to whether it can be modified in such a way that it remains local. I have a personal opinion about that, but we have no proofs yet.
Let me have a last word.
So the
question is whether it's possible to see that the fields localized in the center of the anti-de Sitter space are related to the infrared degrees of freedom of the field theory. And vice versa.
Well, what you can show, the most important thing is this equation, which, let me see if I can find it. I'm sorry, I'm holding up everybody's lunch, but here we go. This equation here that says the killing vectors, which move these fields around in anti-de Sitter space, are given by the conformal field theory operators, make a connection between motions in the anti-de Sitter space and actions on the Hilbert space. And that's actually the basis of a lot of the other work that we're doing that I haven't told you about.
Okay, and let's thank the speaker again.